Cambridge engineer Dr. Hugh Hunt led the team that made the Channel 4 documentary Dambusters Building the Bouncing Bomb. Now, Hugh, did you have any idea what you'd taken on when you were charged with this task?
Well, I said no to start with. No, it was incredible just how difficult it turned out to be. And you can just appreciate for Barnes Wallace doing it at a much bigger scale than we did it, with 19 of these things. Amazing.
So he had to invent the concept and then develop it, then build it, test it, and then engage it. All you had to do was copy, and that was hard enough.
Well, yeah, I guess so, except most of the calculations and his experimental work has all been lost over the years, and we had to reproduce most of it.
And this is for the bouncing bomb itself. That's what we're talking about here. And you've said, in a way, you've explained to me something I've always wondered, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this. I've always wondered, how did the secret of the pyramids get lost? But you've said there's a sort of miniature version of that sort of theory as far as the bouncing bomb's concerned.
Yeah, well, things get lost, I guess, because at the time, people don't really think it's terribly important, and you put stuff in a cupboard and then you move it and it gets moved to another place, and then 70 years later it's all gone.
And this is only 70 years ago, and you do have your own theory about the fact that the better stories take over, they sort of usurp, they supplant the facts, don't they?
Well, what we found by actually doing it was that things can't have been done exactly as it's written in the books, and you write things in a book and it makes a lot of sense. When you actually do it, you find that it's different.
It's like a script, isn't it? It may work on paper, but will it play? That's what they say. Yeah. Will it play out? And often it doesn't.
Yeah, and often it doesn't. And we found that just all the detail, a lot of the details really matter. I mean, spinning the bomb up, getting it to release, the amount of energy required, the vibration you get, all the things that go wrong. I mean, incredible.
And also, we've seen footage, part of your documentary, there's a lot of amazing, very dramatic footage in it from back in the day when Barnes Wallace was testing out on the Kent coast. But of course, you say, even that now, of course, is enhanced because you have the digital playback, instant playback. And what kind of challenges do they face with their development and research?
Well, so there was a really nasty incident. In fact, it was after the war when a bouncing drum came up and hit a mosquito and it crashed, killing the crew. But of course, they wouldn't have been able to process the footage, the video footage. You know, you have to send the film off to be developed and you see it a few days later. These days we get instant replay, but back then they didn't have the advantage of that, and so they just didn't know how dangerous things were, I don't think.
So if you were at a film festival, Hugh, and people hadn't seen your documentary and you had to sell it in 60 seconds, and once again, I've got to say, I know they're the enemy, but it's more about comrades today than enemies in the fullness of time. That's hopefully what always plays out. But the enemy, our enemy, Channel 4, have your documentary being replayed on More 4 tonight at 9 o'clock, and I encourage you, I enthuse you to watch it. If you could sell this documentary, your film that you made over in Canada in 60 seconds, what happens in it?
Well, we start off at the beginning. Me and my kids, we do some little experiments bouncing on a toddler's pool. We go up through swimming pools and bigger scales, exactly as Barnes Wallace did 70 years ago. We then fit our spinning drum underneath a DC-4. We bounce it on the lake. We blow up a dam. And telling the story, but in the historical context, is absolutely fantastic. And it's all beautifully mixed up with interviews with the original members of the crew and with Mary Stopes Rowe and others. It's just a really good story.
Now, Hugh, you are a professor at Cambridge University. Have you found that what you've done over the last 12 months with the bouncing bomb has sort of taken over the rest of your career?
Well, it's interesting. It hasn't. It hasn't. This week is very special. And look, it's been great to have done it. But there are so many other things that have been interesting. I mean, we also did a documentary about flying a glider out of Colditz Castle and digging tunnels for the Great Escape. And there's more to come.
You are the go-to World War II recreation scientist, aren't you?
Well, I think we'll run out of World War II and have to do World War I. Oh, we're going to do Zeppelins.
Are you?
Yeah.
Look at the flicker of excitement. More than that in his eyes as he speaks about the forthcoming Zeppelin. Is it a More 4 production again?
It'll be Channel 4, yeah.
You know, you can come work for the BBC. You are very welcome. With open arms, by the way.
Oh, okay, fine. Anytime.
All right, listen to that, Channel 4. Sorry about that. I apologise. Just poached one of your biggest stars. So, anybody who watches the Dambusters movie itself, which is a brilliant, brilliant film, we watched it last night, and that hasn't aged at all. In fact, it's got even more dramatic and eerie and beautiful, and it's got all the right juxtapositions. It's a fantastic, it's a masterpiece of movie making. We'll realise the affinity that developed between Guy Gibson, the squadron leader, and Barnes Wallace, the inventor of the bouncing bomb. And it wasn't dissimilar with you and your Canadian pilot, was it?
Well, Arnie, very sadly, Arnie's dead now. He died of cancer. But he was just fantastically gung-ho, and he would just make things work. The idea of having to fly low and fast, it's a scary thing for any pilot to do. But, you know, when asked, and they'll do it. Really incredible.
And Arnie, I mean, Arnie pushed on through in your documentary, didn't he, when others may not have done?
Well, he pushed on through, and there were times when it was, look, you know, he says in the documentary, look, if, hey, this might end up being cancelled, and it really might have ended up being cancelled, because things weren't easy.
And incredible. Arnie, very experienced pilot at, in Canada, flying over rough terrain, often putting forest fires out and things like that. And even he struggled to fly in daylight at 80 feet over a lake, not in warfare, not under attack. And when you compare that and consider what Squadron Leader Guy Gibson and his 132 colleagues did back in 1943, it's almost unbelievable, isn't it?
Really unbelievable. But one thing is that I was up in the plane with Arnie, and I wanted to feel what it was like flying down at 60 feet. And we were flying down low over the runway. And I said, oh, Arnie, could you go to 60 feet? He said, oh, yeah, I could go up there if you like. Because we were flying at about 25
feet. That's the kind of guy he was.
And that's the kind of guy he was.
All right, well, listen to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Very good. Thanks, Chris.